bulls across the chest.
Oh, you're damn right.
Yep. It's just like the whole thing where
people announce who they are if they tell you batting average or RBI.
Well, James Fagan it wasn't his fault. He did the right thing. But there were some old school baseball guys that were mad at James Fagan because he gave a 10th place MVP vote to Yoan Moncada, which is completely justified when you look at his F war.
Yeah.
And you see the
five-win player?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, a five-win player. And then I went back and looked at the voting. Abreu was higher in the voting than him. And why?
Really?
Because of RBIs.
Oh, no.
That's why.
That's a shame. That's awful.
Even though I want to say Moncada was a 915 OPS player last year, that is worthy of MVP consideration.
Yeah, those people have to die off.
But even still, like, well, the people that will argue about, well, RBIs, like, I've had someone literally say to me 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Chris Bryant, I would say I'm tired of all the Chris Bryant slander. Mm-hmm. Compare Abreu to Bryant. And then I explained to him that even though Abreu had almost 50 more RBIs than Bryant, Bryant still had a higher OPS than he had.
You know why?
What does that tell you?
Better.
Correct. Yes. Correct.
Yoan Moncada had the sixth highest Fangraph wins above replacement last year.
Yes.
As a third baseman, it goes Bregman, Rendon, Chapman, Devers, Arenado, Moncada.
He was the ninth highest WAR player in the American League last year.
Okay.
Which says to me, the vote is valid, but some of the older school guys, even if you looked at B-War, he was, I think, 4-7.
And that's a tougher one because they like defense a whole lot more. But you know what it also says? That number in and of itself signifies his improvement, which gives you another reason, another layer that you go sign Yasmani Grandal, that you go sign Zach Wheeler, that you go put your best offer in for Garrett Cole, despite the fact that everybody, he's going to the West Coast.
It's a major reason for it.
Where he wants
absolutely
to go.
It's a major reason
it
for
is,
their...
It is absolutely step number one.
That's the primary takeaway from this. The headline on this is the White Sox believe they are contenders now.
They believe the window is open, or else you wouldn't necessarily do this. And you have a year like that from Giolito. You have a year like that from Tim Anderson. You have a year like that from Moncada. And you're expecting Robert to join this bunch. And while there were a lot of ups and downs for Aloy,
yeah,
he still showed you enough to go, he belongs here.
Here's another thing.
Yeah, look at his last 4 weeks or so.
I think he and Moncada had the most hits or something like that in September.
We had like a 1,000 OPS. Yeah.
Given the way you've structured this, given the way the White Sox have structured this financially too, the money on Grandal doesn't matter. It is almost inconsequential to have an $18.25 million player on your roster the next 4 years. It almost doesn't matter. It may matter, if I'm doing the math in my head correctly, it may matter some in his fourth year as you have a couple of guys hit arbitration and grab bigger dollars, but if you, which would be Moncada. But if you do the money out and if you make this thing work, you have basically signed, relative to other major league payrolls, you're taking on Yasmani Grandal for free. I mean, it's just you have nothing on your payrolls. You have nothing there.
I love that they got out in front of this.
Huge.
I really love it. I'm looking forward, you know, now you're starting to hear, well, maybe they're in on Wheeler and maybe they're in on Castellanos to try and add something to this. And that would be fantastic. But as far as a shot across the bow for free agency, sign me up. This feels pretty damn good.
I love for you that they've got a catcher too. As you were walking in, I was like, Lawrence has to be especially pleased about this because they started at the spot that he starts every baseball team with in his own brain.
It's true. That's usually what happens. And they got the best guy that was available.
Best guy you could get.
Out there, which makes me even happier. That's Dan Bernstein and Connor McKnight. They're on every day from 9 a.m. until noon. And sometimes they get big news like that that pops up, like we are going to discuss. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, The Score, a radio.com sports station. The top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves games are perfect, are a perfect place to gather your group for the holidays, whether it's for a company outing, a family celebration, or any other occasion. To set up your group, visit ChicagoWolves.com. We are winners. We are the Wolves. This hour is being brought to you by the Illinois Secretary of State's office. Visit www.realid.ilsos.gov. And we are broadcasting from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and test drive the Hyundai Palisade today. Tony, we got baseball news. Let's go.
What it do, baby?
Yeah. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show,
Matt Nagy talked about Anthony Miller running the wrong depth on a route, and that's why Mitch ended up throwing an interception. I count three times this season where I have asked you, if Anthony Miller is doing stuff to hurt your team, why is Anthony Miller still on the field? If he was supposed to run the route at 16 instead of 14, and he then tipped the ball, and then drew a personal foul and was taunting a guy, an OPI, and did something with his hands. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm kind of sure, but I'm not sure. Why is it that he continues to be put on the field? Because it's not like the production warrant. He's not Allen Robinson. The production doesn't warrant him continuing to be on the field and make mistakes.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I am here with you until 2 o'clock. There is some breaking news. If you're just tuning into the show, guess what? You're just going to not even let it play out?
No, just go.
Just a little bit of the fanfare?
Yeah, just a little
bit. All right. Yasmani Grandal has signed a four-year, $73 million contract with the White Sox to be their everyday catcher.
Don't stop, yeah! Believing.
Woo! This is fantastic news. And it's news that we wanted to talk about with our baseball beat reporter, Bruce Levine. Bruce is at the owner's meeting, right? People just walking by him. Kenny Williams is smiling, strutting like George Jefferson, walking by as the White Sox make a big old deal. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Bruce, why did the White Sox make this move for Yasmani Grandal?
Well, this is their John Lester move. When the Cubs got serious in 2014 in the offseason, they hired Joe Maddon. They went out and signed John Lester to a $155 million contract. This is the beginning of the White Sox throwing down the gauntlet and saying, this is the place to come. This is a team to play for, and this is a team that's going to win in the future with a lot of great young players and the way that we go about signing free agents to plug in the holes that we need. And this was a big one because when it comes to catching, there's nothing more important. And it also sends a great message out there to some of these free agent pitchers that when you come to the Chicago White Sox, you will also be throwing to one of the best framing catchers in the major leagues, and a guy that's going to help you win by hitting a home run or two along the way.
Bruce, how important is this for the reputation of the White Sox to the free agent class?
I think it's huge, you know, because it's the first real big signing. And it also gets the White Sox ahead of the curve. You know, we have the baseball winter meetings coming up in 2.5 weeks where, you know, the agents are out there running their free agents in front of general managers and owners and having meetings and trying to get them signed. This, this puts the White Sox ahead of the curve as far as getting a top flight catcher and also a run producer who's a switch hitter. So from that total perspective, this is a big move for them going forward. And it sends that great message out there to the Wheelers and the Keuchels and, even the Coles that you're going to have a great catcher to throw to when you come to Chicago.
There are plenty of White Sox fans that will look at this and go, well, James McCann had a really good year for the White Sox. Well, what does this do for him? So I'll ask you, what does this do for James McCann, and how does he fit into what the White Sox want to do?
Having a really good backup catcher is great, and that's what the White Sox will have in McCann. You know, nobody catches 160 games, right, Lawrence?
Nope.
So the max is usually about 130, 135, and you also have the luxury of Grandal being a switch hitter, so he can take that DH role. So McCann can do it when the left-hander's there. He can do it when he's getting a rest from catching every day. It's perfect because that DH role is wide open for the Chicago White Sox, and they've left it that way with Abreu getting the qualifying offer, only signed to 1 year right now, maybe an extension of a couple more years down the road. But from that perspective, they have some really great looking situations for them to get guys in and out. You can do it with a Tyler Collins as well, if he indeed ends up back on this team and McCann isn't there at some point. But look at McCann's splits. He was great for the team, the pitching staff. He was an all-star, but the second half was not good. I think he hit about 220 in the second half. So this is a push toward 2021, 22, 23, and hopefully Grandal is catching a world champion on this south side of Chicago.
And I wonder if that's what a team that was trying to grind against the playoffs, he played in 153 games last year. And that's probably too many games and maybe a reason why you saw a dip in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there is that erosion factor. They talked about it with Wilson Contreras of the Cubs last year, saying that he caught more innings than any catcher in baseball. And they thought he wore down in the final month, the final 2 months of the season last year. I'm talking about 2018. And so from that perspective, you can keep your number one catcher strong and rested and have a quality backup catcher. I don't see anything bad about McCann being backup on this team.
Bruce, what do you think happened inside the White Sox season last year that made the front office, compelled the front office to go out and get ahead of free agency by making a move like this?
Well, this was their plan all along, Lawrence. I mean, they have said on numerous occasions 20 and 21 were going to be their years. And they have the residual dollars to spend in free agency. They're not going to go up to a $200 million payroll. That's not the White Sox monetary situation. That's not their revenue. But they still have a lot of room to go, and they can add a couple of pitchers and a left-handed bat if they can. Left-handed bat would be really important. You know, doesn't have to be a superstar, but it can be somebody, you know, that can hit 20, 25 home runs and play a solid right field. Outfield defense is a key. With Robert coming in as a rookie, we'll find out about his defensive skills. You've now solidified things behind the plate. So White Sox have a lot of moves to make, and I think they're going to make more.
What do you think the White Sox learned about what they offer free agents from what happened last year with Manny Machado?
I don't think they learned anything. I mean, that was the offer. I mean, it was over a $300 million offer. Actually, the exact amount was if he made all his incentives, he would have made more with the White Sox. So there was nothing that they learned from it. That was as far as they were going to go for Machado, and as it turned out, they had a better third baseman with better numbers than Machado had last year.
Yeah, Moncada had a really great year for the White Sox. What do they now expect for him going forward? Is there another level of his game that they think he can get to?
Moncada? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he can be a perennial all-star, a guy that hits 25 to 30, steals 20, 25 bases, drives in 85 or 90, depending on where he bats in the batting order, and just another one of the electric players on that team. They have quite a few of them, and a lot of people in baseball are looking at the White Sox as that team, even before the signing of Grandal, is the one that's going to step up. They do need to solidify their pitching staff. It's not a playoff caliber pitching staff until they make a couple of additions, but you know, if you look very carefully about how they held their veteran relief pitchers from last year and didn't trade him at the deadline, that was a clear indication to us in the media and White Sox fans that they were hell-bent on competing in 2020.
What's the expectation for Kopech and Rodon?
Rodon's not going to pitch until mid-year at the earliest. He won't be back from Tommy John, so there's no expectations early for him. When it comes to Kopech, he's good to go. He can pitch right now. He's going to be pitching for a rotation spot in spring training, and it's 100%, you know, pedal to the metal on Kopech. They're hoping that he picks up where he left off with the few starts he had in the major leagues and is an impact pitcher.
Bruce, as always, I appreciate the information. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Lawrence. Take care, buddy.
That's Bruce Levine. He is out at the owners' meeting that are going on right now. If you're just joining us, the White Sox have signed Yasmani Grandal, the catcher. 4 years, $73 million. Grandal last year was about a 850 OPS player, 246, 380, 468 was his slash line. He walked over 100 times last season. He did have a second half dip, but offensively, there definitely wasn't another catcher better available. And he hit 28 bombs last year. And it's hard to judge with some of the power numbers because what we all think of the ball, but I also don't think that the ball is going to change. So maybe this is an even better thing for him. But they got out quick, and that's what I love about it. I do disagree with Bruce. I think that while with what we saw with Machado last year, I think that the White Sox had to make sure that free agents knew that the money that was being offered was real and that the incentives aspect of a contract is not what's going to sell a free agent on being on your roster. That you have an opportunity to go real money, $18.25 million per real money. What do you say? And Grandal's like, you know what? That seems fantastic. It's real money? Yeah. 18.25 per. Okay. I like that. I like real money. I like it a lot. And if you add that to some of the things that the White Sox already have in place, you had Tim Anderson have a breakout season. You had Yoan Moncada straight up and down be one of the best players in the American League last year. If you care about RBIs, Jose Abreu was still driving in runs and led the league in RBIs last year. You saw Aloy come up. You saw Giolito be an all-star. So there are definitely some things happening. And I think there were a lot of White Sox fans that had kind of reached the limits of their patience. I don't mean to speak for you, but I am of you, so allow me to speak for you. I know I was there. If you heard me at the end of the season, I was at the end of my patience, that they needed to not just make a splash, but do some smart team building. It's not just spend money to spend money. It's spend money in good areas on good free agents. And I think that they have one here in Grandal. And I'm looking forward to seeing how all of this plays out and then what happens next. Do they get Zach Wheeler or Dallas Keuchel? Do they go get Nicholas Castellanos? Is this an announcement by the White Sox that we're open for business in 2020? That, yes, we still have other parts that we need to add to the team and young players that we're hoping develop, like Robert, that we expect he will be up at some point soon. Or maybe they get a deal done with him like they did with Aloy and he's there opening day. But if you like to talk about it, we can talk about it. You can text us at 670-11 if you wish your thoughts. Some people have already done that. Or you can call in 312-644-6767. The White Sox land the first big free agent of free agency. What do you think about it? We'll discuss it next here on The Score.
Mully here from the Mully and Haw Show, mornings 5 to 9. Up next for the 4-6 Bears. They're taking on the football Giants. We're covering it all right up to game time on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's home for Bears fans.
This is John Feinstein with a CBS Sports Minute. The Orange Bowl has a problem. It's called the Atlantic Coast Conference. By contract, the Orange Bowl has to take the highest-ranked available team from the ACC to play in its game. Here's the problem. The only ACC team currently ranked is third-ranked Clemson, which, barring an unexpected disaster, will be in the college football playoff. So, who's next? Actually, no one. It isn't just that none of the other ACC teams is ranked. It's that